I should note up front that the story Barbara just read of the healing of the 10 lepers is one of my favorite biblical stories. I come back to it often. Across 40-some years of regular preaching, I suppose I preached on this text more than any other text than, say, the second chapter of Luke's Gospel, which, of course, is the appointed reading for Christmas Eve. And the reason I find this text so important is that no biblical text is more foundational to my understanding of stewardship than this text. Because I believe no factor more determines our stewardship than gratitude. The actual story, as Barbara told it, is straightforward. 10 lepers come to Jesus asking for mercy. 10 outcasts because of a disease that drove them to the margins, the outskirts of society. Jesus offers them mercy by sending them to the priest for ritual cleansing, purification, re-entry into the community. And they go. And as they go, all 10 of them are healed. And then one, a Samaritan, notices something. He notices that he has been healed and is overcome by that notice. And so he turns on his heels and he races back to the feet of Jesus, where he falls on his face before the one who has healed him and given him back his life. That's it. It's a simple story. And yet it leaves for its hearers unanswered questions. Questions that not so much about the story itself, but about those who hear it. And personally, I find that I'm left with two particularly haunting questions at the end of the story. The world is full of gracious gifts, but will I notice, first? And then second, if I notice, then how will I choose to live? Truthfully, those questions are foundational questions for all Christian life, because our faith affirms that the fundamental fact about our lives is grace. In love, God reaches out to help, to heal, to restore us. God's love is expansive, it's abundant, it's full of grace. And yet, according to the story, the odds are about 9 to 1 that we won't get that. And what a shame that is, because an awareness of grace can change one's perspectives and relationships and one's capacity for joy, even in less optimal circumstances. Some years back, I heard an essay written by singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter and recorded for the This I Believe segment of NPR's Morning Edition. It was an essay about suffering a life-threatening pulmonary embolism. She told of a terrible breathlessness she felt and chest pain that landed her in the emergency room one night, and of her subsequent hard decisions to cancel an upcoming tour and to let valued musicians go while she recuperated. Over the ensuing weeks and months, all of her attempts to see the time off as a gift were met by a deepening and spiraling depression, until one day. Sometimes, she said, it is the smile of a stranger that helps, or a phone call from a long absent friend checking on you. She said, I found my lifeline at the grocery store. One morning, the young man who rang up my groceries told me earnestly to enjoy the rest of my day. I looked at him and I knew he meant it. And it stopped me in my tracks. I went out and I sat in my car and cried. What I want more than ever, she said, is to appreciate that I have this day and tomorrow, perhaps, and with hope, days beyond that. I'm experiencing the learning curve of gratitude, she said. I don't want to say, have a nice day, and be like a robot in saying it. I don't want to get mad at the elderly driver in front of me. I don't want to go crazy when my internet access is messed up. I don't want to be jealous of anyone else's success. And you could say that that litany of sins indicates that I don't want to be human. The learning curve of gratitude, though, is showing me exactly how human I am. And I wonder how it took me my entire life to learn to appreciate just one day. Maybe such wonder and puzzlement struck the 10th leper as well, the one who turned around and came back to Jesus. After such a long experience of vulnerability and exclusion, he was suddenly face to face with the grace and possibilities in his life. Maybe he noticed that he was that grace. Maybe he noticed that he was beginning to need to exhibit some grace and gratitude of his own. Now, lifting up that one leper, I should say, is not to cast aspersions on the other nine who made a different choice. I can only imagine how overwhelming the experience of healing must have been for them. Barbara Shola says, "I'm sure the lepers were speechless, overwhelmed with the shock of disbelief at their good fortune. One moment they're living a dreadful, diseased, quarantined existence, and then in the time it took to walk to the village priest, their skin healed, their vision cleared, their sores dried up. The local priest sounded the all clear, freeing them to return to society, to their homes, to their families, to their productive lives. If you think about the way you would have reacted, it's hard to blame the lepers for scattering to the wind and leaving the past behind them like a bad dream." But Luke tells us that the Samaritan, upon seeing before his eyes the miraculous healing of his body, is overcome with gratitude, and so he turns back to give thanks. We know from his loud voice and from his falling flat on his face at Christ's feet that even his body cannot contain this praise and thanksgiving. Luke and scholar John Carroll says that the point toward which this story presses us is doxology. And it does. It points us toward praise and gratitude before the remarkable grace of God. Yet doxology and gratitude are still, as Mary Chapin Carpenter said, a learning curve for many of us. And thus my questions still remain. The world is full of gracious gifts, but will I notice? And if I notice, then how will I choose to live? As important as stewardship season is in the life of a church, and it is important, stewardship is about so much more than how big a pledge we will make for the next year. That pledge will be a byproduct of other things. Stewardship is about finding answers to the crucial questions about what we notice, about choosing to live in some manner that honors and gives tangible expression to what we have seen and what we have heard. Our investment of time and energy and resources in the life of the church are among the ways that we give such expression, and there are many people, both within and beyond our number, who stand to benefit substantially if we do. Gratitude and doxology can unlock so much in our lives once we see, once we notice the grace that is all around us. Of course, not everyone notices, but it is an amazing thing to witness when one does. There's a wonderful story I heard some years ago about a Wynton Marsalis concert some years back over at the Village Vanguard, one of New York's premier jazz clubs. Marsalis was performing a song called "I Don't Stand a Ghost of a Chance with You." He was playing the trumpet, and the audience was sitting in awe of his artistry. One writer described it this way: Marsalis performed the song in murmurs and sighs, at points nearly talking the words into the notes. It was a wrenching act of creative expression. And when he reached the climax, Marsalis played the final phrase, that is the title statement, in declarative tones, allowing each successive note to linger in the air a bit longer. I don't stand a ghost of a chance. And just as he was about to reach the powerful conclusion of the song, that happened. Wynton Marsalis stopped playing. The offending audience member ran for the door, which, if you've ever been to the Village Vanguard, you know was no easy trick. And the rest of the crowd just didn't know how to react. A few people laughed awkwardly, but mostly there was just silence. At that moment, Marsalis might have stormed off the stage. He might have raged at the offending audience member. He could have done any number of things, and everybody would have understood. But instead, he paused for a beat, motionless, arched his eyebrow a bit, and then he started to play again. Only he didn't play the song he had been playing. Instead, he played the tone from the cell phone. And then he improvised variations on that cell phone tune before finally transitioning flawlessly back into the conclusion of the original song. He finished to a thunderous ovation, not just because of his skill playing the original song, but because of the way he was able to improvise in a moment that might have panicked most of us. As I've shared here before, Paul Duke once said that gratitude and praise are the jazz factors of faith. Indeed, that praise is love improvising its answer to love. I think that what happened with the Samaritan leper, an improvisational act of praise and gratitude in response to God's grace, was that sort of thing. He noticed the grace that had come his way. It turned him around. It sent him into an improvisational path of gratitude. In my life, I've had the privilege of witnessing others who wonderfully embraced such improvisation. When I'm at my best, I too can improvise such praise. When I'm at my best, even simple daily occurrences can stir gratitude. A glimpse of sunlight breaking through the gray winter day. A warm bowl of oatmeal on a chilly morning. A safe arrival at the apartment after a hair-raising ride from LaGuardia. An unexpected act of kindness. A morsel of bread. A small cup of juice. When I'm at my best, I can improvise praise and gratitude in such moments. At other times, I truthfully find myself and my senses dulled by routine, or my conscious thoughts consumed by anxiety, by pettiness and envy, by expectation or demand. And in those days, I do well simply to do all that I feel is required of me. And by that, I mean the commands of God for faithfulness or for treating others with respect, or for demonstrating kindness to a neighbor. Sometimes the requirements can seem like demand and burden. But I long to live by gratitude. I do, to spend my days improvising praise. I aspire to such a life. It's a lifelong learning curve for me. And I know I'm not the only one who seeks such a life. I'm in league with Mary Chapin Carpenter and with countless others who have noticed the way life is full of gracious gifts and who want to choose a life that bears evidence of what we've noticed. I want to live generously, graciously as a result. Alan Culpepper says, "Here is a barometer of spiritual health. Although gratitude is not synonymous with faith, neither faith nor gratitude can be separated one from the other. The tenth leper's faithful, untainted gratitude for God's mercy is humbling to see. He realizes that his life is a gift, that just to get up the next day would be windfall. How will you improvise your response to such a windfall? What can we learn from the story of the 10 lepers? In part, at least, we learn that the healing and restorative grace of God is a gift, given out of an abundance of love. It is pure gift. Gratitude, on the other hand, is a choice. It's a way of life. It's a manner of living, if you will, one that can claim you in your humanity, change your whole perspective, and magnify the gifts you've been given, but only if you notice and if you choose.